This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Hey, everybody, I'm Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 8th, episode 1515. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
I'm so happy you stopped by today because we've got some really cool stuff going on. We've got Sarah Johnson with the Horse Education Company. She's going to stop by and tell us about that really cool online resource for folks. And then we're going to do a lot of listener Q&A. We're going to answer some questions about side passing and questions about lazy horses and talk questions about horses who talk too much and horses who want to buck you off when you get on. All of that is coming up. Well, greetings, Mary. Thanks for coming back here for the second Thursday of every month. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We're a bit underwater, but not quite as bad.
Yeah.
We're lucky compared to, of course, Louisiana. And but yeah, it's a bit flooded out here.
Is your indoor all done?
It is mostly done. We keep adding to it. It's tweaking. You know, when you build these, I'm finding this out. This is the first time I've had something like this built. And so initially, I just wanted cover and a dry spot to ride.
Yes.
And so that was the first thing. And then I thought, well, you know, I'm going to need some fencing around the cover so I can keep the horses in the dry spot to ride. And I'm building this in my pasture, so I have to keep other horses out. So that got done. And then the double gates, I needed double gates so I could get the tractor to, you know, drag the dry
That's
spot.
True. Yes.
And then I realized, these double gates are so cumbersome, especially if I'm leading a green horse in and it's in my pasture and the other horse is going to want to run around. So, you know, I need a smaller gate on the other side because that's closer to my barn and tack room. So, you know, okay, we got to do the smaller gate. And then I thought, you know, it'd be really nice since this structure is already built to just extend the roof a little further on one side of the building and put some nice 20 by 10, stalls on the other side. And so those are getting built. And then I thought, okay, so we got the gates, on the outside of those, but wouldn't it be nice if I had gates that would lead to the arena on the inside? Because if I'm starting, say, a Mustang, that would be so convenient. I could halter break them in this stall. And then when they're ready, instead of leading them out of the stall and around to the gates, I could just open the gate to the inside of the arena. So by the end of this, it's going to have a hot tub and a water slide and a garage for my car.
This is going to be the Mary Kitzmiller training compound.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
I love it.
But you're right though. When you have any kind of a work area, whether it's a round pen or a covered arena or a riding ring or a dressage arena, if it is located inside of a pasture where horses are loose, invariably, anybody who's loose in that pasture has to come over and disrupt your training.
Oh, and that's already happened. You know, I have the spot, the covered spot, so I've already begun to use it. And of course, everyone wants to come in the gate with me. I'm like, you know, normally you guys are hard to catch. Yeah. So they got to come in. And our poor welders, they have been messing stuff up, you know, walking on top of the metal that's sitting on the ground waiting to go on the roof. And, you know, they've got 10 acres of pasture to run around. And of course, they want to be in the middle of it all. But then if I go catch them to ride, no, they got to run away. They're a wild Mustang at that point.
Oh, that's funny. So is it a steel structure, not wood?
It is both. So it's mostly steel, and then the fencing around is got a steel frame, and then it's got these vertical slats of wood. So it's actually a solid fence around.
Yeah, and I was looking at pictures that you had posted. It looks like you have the slanted wall, so it kind of slants out, so you don't wrap your knees against the walls as you go around.
No, and I hate those. Because it's good that, yes, you don't get your kneecaps whacked off. But in some cases, especially if they're a little too slanted, the horse, with their depth perception, they think that wall is shorter than it is. And I have heard stories of horses jumping out of those things because they think they can clear it. I'm not a big fan of those. Yeah.
Because when you think about it, now this is something you might not think of because you primarily do the Western thing. That's actually how they build a jump so that the horse can tell how high it is. The base is always closer to the horse's approach than the top.
Well, and even if you don't have that, that's why you put your ground poles in front of your little cross rails and stuff.
So why would they think? I just think they made that up because horses sometimes jump out of indoor arenas for stupid reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made that up. So, but yours but your wall is just perfectly vertical.
Yes. Yes. And
the slanty ones.
It's between it's about 6 feet tall.
Oh,
so
my.
It is. Oh, I love it.
Nobody's going anywhere.
It's going to be a perfect Mustang training doohickey.
Now, is the Mary Kitzmiller Coliseum have footing in it, or are you using what Mother Nature provided?
My natural footing in on my place is actually pretty good. It's mostly kind of like a sandy loam, which is why you have a lot of your cutters and rainers up in North Texas, about 2 hours north of me, because that footing is just so good by itself. So my footing is pretty similar to that. The only problem is there's just enough, I guess, clay in it that when it gets wet, it's very slippy slidey. Now, you drive 20 minutes east of me and it's all sugar sand and you can ride in standing water. So my natural footing's pretty good. But I am going to have to haul a little bit of extra in because when it's dry, it's very powdery and dusty. And then also, the arena, the bottom is sitting a few inches off the ground. And so as it is now, a little bit of rain can still get in. So I need to add a little bit extra so I can pile it up. I can let it sort of bowl out a little bit and pile it up. Mm-hmm. Against the bottom of that pen so nothing gets in.
So you're not going to go with any of the fancy schmancy high-tech footing? You're just going to put in some more of Mother Nature's?
Exactly. Just more, probably a little bit more sand. Mm-hmm. That'll...
Just going to drive down to your neighbor's place, get a couple of scoops out of the front yard.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a place down the road that does, that does all that, so I'll have a couple trucks come in.
And it's got of course it's got a steel roof.
Yes.
So that it's really loud when it rains hard.
You know, it's not too bad.
But the sides are open except for the fence, right? It's not completely enclosed. That makes a big difference. When you completely enclose them in tin, it's like sitting in, it's just crazy loud.
Yeah, it feels like a hurricane. You're like, oh man, I can't go
outside.
It's drizzle.
Open
the door. Yeah.
Yeah.
A light foggy mist.
Yes. Yeah. And then we had one of those. Ours was completely enclosed with tin. And, even the littlest bit of rain, you couldn't hear yourself think. It was so loud because it just echoed inside of there.
Yes, yes. Nope, this is just pretty much a roof with some extra doodads attached.
And yeah, stalls and pens and a hot tub.
Yes, yes, that's gonna be perfect.
Yeah, well, there we go. Well, let's go ahead and I want to hear about what Guthrie has been up to because Guthrie is your problem child.
Yes, he's a bit of my high maintenance baby. So Guthrie, I have been, kind of on and off trying to figure out. He's got a mysterious foot soreness issue that we've been working on for a while. And today we've been to about 4 different vets and countless farriers. And I've been trying to solve the issue with a kind of slower fixing and biomechanically, changing the shoes type of, wait and see type of deal. But that's not cutting it. So, I took him to yet another vet, about last week, I think it is. And he was the first vet. No one has been saying navicular, as in navicular syndrome.
The N word. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. In fact, one vet said, I don't even want you to worry about it. I'm like, okay, but I am. And so the latest set of radiographs that we took of him that we compared to x-rays from a year ago, there are significant changes. So he does have changes to his navicular bone. And then what we're trying to find out now is what, if any, soft tissue damage he might have. So I have done a lot of radiographs and I have done a sonogram, but that can only go so far down the leg. It can't go into the foot where there's a lot of stuff going on in there. So finally bit the bullet, and he probably right this minute is getting an MRI up in Irving, Texas. I think this is one of only two places in the country that does it in this way.
Is it the standing MRI?
No, it's going to be general anesthesia.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm just sweating bullets a little bit.
Wow, that's going hardcore there, girl.
It is. Like super hardcore magnets. Knock him on the ground, put it around his feet.
Did they explain to you why you would do a general anesthesia MRI versus a standing? Is there something you can see with one, not the other? Or is it just what they have?
Pretty much what they have, but from the light Googling I did.
Light Googling?
Yeah. So for this particular facility and that machine, they need to lay the horse out to put this, mm-hmm. to put his feet into the machine. But from what I understand, the standing MRIs have less powerful magnets. Not to say you still couldn't get a good diagnosis using it, but I think this one is like ultimate hardcore, top of the line.
Are you going to see the molecules in his hoof? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yes.
Now, is this something that he's got in both front feet, or is there one that seems to be affected and one that's not?
It is both. Now, here's the strange thing. His right foot conformationally is worse than his left, and that is where most of his lameness shows up. Left foot, he's doing pretty good on it now. I'd say he's almost pretty much sound on the left foot, and the left foot looks a lot better. But on his most recent radiographs, the biggest things that popped up were all on his left foot, which I found interesting.
I had a similar experience in that we had a horse that was displaying navicular-like syndromes. Now, mind you, this was 20 years ago. And he was diagnosed with navicular syndrome before he came to my care by a previous owner, just because he acted that way. He tended to point his toe, mm-hmm. you know, conformation, etc. Although he did not have contracted heels, nor did he mm-hmm. have low heels. So we got him. And when we took x-rays, even though he was acting like he had navicular, his x-rays didn't show he had any. There was no change at all. I was like, nothing going on there. But he displayed all the outward symptoms you would expect a horse with navicular to show. Now, they've done a ton of research since then. And a matter of fact, a lot of vets don't like to call it navicular anymore. They like to call it heel pain syndrome.
Yes, now it's like caudal heel pain. Yeah, and it's so not...
You've got a tough road ahead. That's all I can say.
Oh, my gosh. And what I didn't realize either is this is not like a one-shot disease where it's this one set of symptoms that you can diagnose with like a blood test and he's negative or positive. It is kind of a syndrome. And from what I've understood, you know, there's been horses, I've had vets tell me they've had horses with terrible foot conformation, really bad looking stuff on the radiographs, perfectly sound. And then they've had horses like yours where radiographs are clean, foot looks good, but they're lame.
Yes. And it's such so an enigma. Tricky. Such an enigma. Yeah. I don't envy you, but kudos to you for keeping after it and trying to figure out what poor old Guthrie's issue is.
Yes. And you know, I kind of mentioned something about Facebook and people were like, don't worry, it's not a death sentence. You can pull him through it. And I want people to know that this isn't like a, if I find something that I can't cure, he's got to get put down next week. I mean, he's still, it's even now, like if I were to trot him by you and you've never seen the sorcerer known as history, you wouldn't blink an eye. So he's going to be okay for a long time. I mean, he's going to be standing and happy and well cared for, but probably
he's not going to be your barrel champion, is he?
No, probably not going to run him down the fence at a cow horse show anytime soon.
But
so
he can stand on a podium and he can bow.
Exactly. Well, and I'm teaching him to, I've taught him his name. I'm teaching him to tell the difference between, you know, plush toys. We can do that till the end of time. So if he's my world's smartest horse who can do math problems and spell and stuff, great. That's
See,
what we'll do.
Guthrie is the horse equivalent of the geek. He can't play basketball to save his life, mm-hmm. cannot hit a baseball, drops the tennis racket, falls down playing soccer, but he knows his math.
Yes. Yes. So he's...
He's a pocket protector.
Well, yes. Yes, he's definitely that. So there's a, you know, that's the cool thing about a lot of the training I'm getting into now is there's still a ton I can do with him and teach him and show people. And so either way, you know, I'm hopeful. But I would, you know, ultimately I want to get him as comfortable as I possibly can.
Right, exactly. You make him as happy as he can be so that he can be as active. Because the more active they are, the better they are healthy-wise, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like Guthrie's future is secure, but not necessarily your bank accounts.
Exactly. Well, this will be cheaper in the long run because before this, I was bleeding out, you know, hundreds of dollars just guessing. And at least now I'm hoping that I get a diagnosis of this is what it is. Here's what you can or can't do. And then I have a plan of action.
That's always good. Get as much information as you can as early on as you can so that you're not just throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Which is what I've been doing up till now.
And speaking of throwing spaghetti at the wall, most of us who have spent any time traveling about with horses have come across one who won't get out of the horse trailer. And it seems our training tip this month is how to deal with a horse that absolutely refuses to get off the trailer.
Yes. I tell you what, if you've never experienced this before, this is one of the most terrifying things that can happen, in my opinion, is you get a horse, maybe you just bought the horse or whatever, and you go to get in your trailer to back him off, and he will not do it. And the trailer is too small for him to turn around, and it's just a really scary situation, especially if your horse adamantly thinks that he can turn around, but he clearly can't. I have been in a trailer with a broodmare that tried to turn around, and she actually wedged my head with her body into the trailer, and we were both stuck like that. Oh. We were both stuck like that for it was probably only seconds, but it felt like forever. And I mean, there's just, what do you do? I just had to wait it out until she popped out. My head was a little bit more narrow that day.
Wow.
Yes. And I recently had a friend who got severely injured in a trailer with a broke horse, that just panicked in there. And so when you get a horse that most of the time, this is a horse that, has always been turned around in the trailer. Maybe they're just used to stock trailers or just big roomy trailers and they've never been backed out. And that horse, a lot of the times what I've experienced with these horses is they will back to a certain point, and then the first time that back foot steps off and maybe they don't feel ground
That's
right away,
freak out time. Yep.
Then they get back on. They're like, nope, done. We're done forever. And I've heard stories of people that will just pull the trailer in the round pen, open it up, and it'll take days and the horse finally gets out. And so I've actually got one of these in training right now. This is a really nice mare that this family just bought. She's kind of a ranch horse, and she's always been turned around on trailers, and they didn't know. I mean, it's not something you think about a lot of the times when you're going to buy a horse.
You ask somebody if your horse loads. You never ask, well, does he get off?
Yeah, does he back off?
I don't.
And they have a very nice two horse, I think it's a It's a two horse trailer, but it's not big enough. And she's a pretty long mare. It's not big enough for her to turn around in. And it took them hours and hours and hours to get them to back off. And then that was kind of a harrowing experience for her. So then now she also doesn't, you know, she has worries about getting on the trailer. Yeah. So
if that's what's going to happen when I go to get off, I just don't want to get on at all. Sure. Yes. I understand that.
Because it's a scary moment. So I have her in training with the specific task of teaching her to back out of a trailer consistently. So what I do when I get a horse like this, or what I do anyway when I'm teaching any horse to load, even if they can turn around the trailer, I always like them to back. I never want to get in this situation with them. So I teach them to load on and off something that's pretty safe. So that could be a pedestal, or I have a little bridge that I built.
Oh, yeah, the bridge with the goat and the cow.
Yes, that's why I drug that. Yes. So I drug that bridge out to start working with this mare. And
now let's take a break here, and we're going to say, okay, how did you make your bridge? What is it made of? So people at home.
Okay. So this is actually a bridge that I got from Jonathan Field at Road of the Horse. It was one of his props, and I recently rebuilt it. So I didn't build it completely from scratch, but I had before. And it's pretty much, I want to say it's like a 4x4 square bridge. And then it's got 2x4s as its framework. So it's a 2x4 square, and then there's a board across the middle as a brace. And then it's got very thick plywood on top of that. And I just laid some more on top of it recently just to reinforce everything. And
so it's really only about 3 or 4 inches tall. High.
Yeah. Maybe I'd say maybe 5 or 6 really. Okay. So it's easy on, easy off. If the mare decides she doesn't want to back off the bridge, it's not the end of the world. Or she panics and jumps around, I'm not pinned in a box with her. Right. So she can get all of that anxiety out of her in a very safe spot from both me and her. And what I really like about this bridge is with this particular mare, it's got more than enough room for her to get all 4 feet on, but she can't just stand like she normally stands. She actually has to shift weight onto her front end and put her back to get her back feet on. She's kind of got to do like a goat on a mountain pose, yes,
but not by a whole bunch.
Yes.
It's very attainable.
Yes. Yeah, very much. So that is a big brain teaser for horses to learn. And when I practice the bridge with a horse or pedestal with a horse like her, where I'm using it really to teach her to back off the trailer, I make a rule of we don't walk off the bridge. There's only one way on, one way off. I never, and this is obstacle work in general. With most obstacles I do, I pick an entry point and an exit point, whether I'm having them cross over or back on and backing off. So she's not allowed to go over the side of it. She's not allowed to go so far to one side that she might fall off the side. I treat it like it's your trailer. You need to go right to the middle. You need to get on. You can't go off the front of it because there's a wall there. There's an imaginary wall there, and you must back off, and you must back off straight. Because even though this is mostly safe, she can still, rough herself up if she doesn't think. Mm-hmm. So in order for her to load nice and straight and stop at a certain point on the bridge and back off straight, I have to have a lot of control. I have to have hip and shoulder control. I have to have a good brake on her, a good backup. And then finally, to get her to put all 4 feet on without walking off the edge, she has to learn, and this is tricky, she has to learn to shift her weight onto her front end, lift her back feet on, put them on the bridge, but then she has to learn how to put her weight on her back feet. And usually the simple process of doing all of that, any nervousness she has and anxiety, and this was a very nervous and anxious and hot mare. She's a barrel mare, so she's kind of bred to be a little keyed up, and she's very reactive, very smart and sweet, but she tends to, if it's a little bit nerve-wracking for her, she just reacts and moves instead of stops and thinks.
Right.
So to do all this, it makes her use her brain. And if I can at least get that to happen, then I stand a much better chance of getting her on and off a trailer. Mm-hmm. So I like to teach them to put 1 foot on the bridge at a time, take it back off, 1 foot on, 1 foot off, 1 foot on, 1 foot off. Now 2 feet on, 2 feet off, 2 feet on, 2 feet off. Now 3, now 4. And I do this over and over and over and over again. And then here's something else that's really important. It's not enough for her to just back off. She has to back off and continue backing straight. So this is going to decrease the chance of when I go onto the trailer, if she doesn't have a nice straight backup, she might back into the corner of the trailer and rub her butt against a divider or something sticking out, which will scare her, could rub, you know, rub yeah. some skin on her.
And something else that happens a lot, and for mm-hmm. people who have ramp horse trailers like we currently have, teaching the horse to back up straight, which is something I need to teach Nigel because he doesn't. They step off the side of that ramp 3 inches outside of it. Well, that's a very dangerous place for the mm-hmm. horse to step off the ramp. And
yes.
it's really, really easy for them to hurt themselves. So
even
if you have a ramp trailer, teaching them to back straight, I'm glad you brought that up because that is something that people tend to really miss. They'll practice getting the horse on and letting the horse get out. But practicing backing up straight is so important.
They got to get straight. And so I'll exaggerate it. So even, you know, when we do get this problem fixed and I'm at a show and I back her off, I try to make a habit instead of just letting her back off. And then as soon as she's off, she's trying to turn around and really bird about to look around the parking mm-hmm, lot. Mm-hmm. I back her off. I get off with her. And then we keep backing straight for 10 or 20 feet. So that's just a habit. If she mm-hmm. can back 20 feet straight, then the couple feet off the trailer is going to be easy. And so what I'm wanting to happen, so how do I make that happen in the trailer now that we got it on the bridge? Even though it's similar, the trailer's still going to be a different experience. My trailer's a little higher than her bridge, and it's scarier, and it's dark, and all this stuff. So when I go to the trailer, when I load this mare on the trailer, I don't just let her hop in and then pray for the best to back her off. I do the same thing on the trailer. You need to go straight to the middle, put 1 foot on, 1 foot off. Now 2 feet on, 2 feet off. Now, when it comes to her back feet, what this mare tends to do is she walks her front feet on, then she hops her back feet on. Well, if she does that, she kind of loses the experience of being able to put one back foot on, kind of just set it there without putting any weight on it and then stepping it off. Mm-hmm. If I can't get her to do that, then if she just hops her back feet on, we'll get stuck again because it's a mental thing for her more than anything. She just doesn't think when I'm on a trailer, I can back off. So I very carefully teach her not just to hop on without thinking, go right to the middle. In fact, sometimes I'll even stop her from loading. Like, okay, I just want you to stop. Now back up. Now, okay, now put 1 foot on.
I've
really
found that very useful to teach them that you can yes. get a halfway on and halfway off and it's cool.
Yeah, just don't mindlessly fly on there.
Yeah.
And then, so after I get 2 feet on, now I teach her to start walking her 2 feet as far as she can get them to where she has no choice but to lift a back foot. And what I'd like to happen is for her just to put one back foot up and just kind of set it there. She didn't have to put any weight down on it. Just cock a back foot up. And usually at that point, it will be more easy for her to take that back foot and then place it back on the ground. And if I can get her to do that with each back foot, now she's getting the experience of, oh, okay, that ground's not so far. So then after that, then I'll ask her to, okay, now go ahead and put both back feet on. But if by this time, she's had the experience many, many times, both on the bridge and on the trailer, of lifting a foot, placing it on the surface, backing it off. At that point, I'm pretty confident I can get that horse to back off. And then it's just a matter of repeating it over and over, being really reassuring, not trying to make it too scary a thing for her. And the more times I can get her to practice that good behavior, the greater chance I have of that other behavior of turning around off the trailer, I'll have more of a chance of that going away.
Yeah. Now, when you're working with your horse on these loading exercises, let's say you're at that point that today we've mastered 1 foot on, 1 foot off. We've mastered two front feet on, two front feet off. Today we're going to start on getting one back foot in. Can you spend too much time in a given session doing this and that the horse is going to shut down and say, I don't want to do it anymore. It's uncomfortable and it's stressful. Is there some kind of a time frame? Is there something we should look for in our horse to say, this is a good point to stop. Don't overdo it.
Yes. Obviously, repeating something over and over is a good thing because she gets to have that experience. It develops into a habit. But, and with this mare, it's actually really easy. This mare in particular, like I said, she's a little bit on the muscle, kind of hot, athletic. She tends to sort of react instead of, okay, let me think my way through this. And so she can get a little bit more anxious about things. And she has this habit of, when she's done, when the egg timer on her brain has kind of dinged and she's like, nope, I can't learn anymore, she actually starts kind of making this chewing motion with her mouth and sort of curling her lip up and showing me her teeth. And if I see that, I'm like, we're done, you know, and I'll put her away, let her eat her hay, and we'll try again later. So with her, you're better off in any case, instead of doing like an hour long session a day, do, you know, 10, 5 minute sessions. You know, if you're, mm-hmm. if you're waiting for your farrier to come, you don't have time to ride another horse. He's going to be here in about 20 minutes. Get your horse out, work on it for 5 minutes, put him up. Yeah. Then get them out later, you know, if it's kind of getting dark, you really don't have time to do something, but you know, you got a few minutes. All right, get that horse out, load her, unload her. Yeah. And that has really been helpful with her. And or sometimes, like with this mare in particular, I'll get her out and I think, okay, I'm going to work on this and this and this and this today. But if she does something amazing right off the bat, like it was a huge leap and she did it, how's it going to get any better? Put her away.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get her out later.
Horses all have very different learning curves. I noticed that with Scooter and Nigel. Scooter, I can't work on one thing for if it's something that he finds stressful. And this is a very serious learning episode for him. He's like, okay, we're going to conquer this. 7 minutes. You better be finished and end on a success because he's going to shut down any second. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nigel, he seems to have to repeat it, and he actually gets better. He'll get it sort of right, and then he'll get a little bit better right, and a little bit better right. He's quite the reverse. He really needs to practice it 10 more times than I think he should. And then a week later, he's like instant light bulb. Very different learning styles between those two horses.
And that's really Guthrie, too. Guthrie is a get better and better and better horse. Unless I want to do something with a lot of energy that's going to burn calories. Then it's like 30 seconds and we're done. But,
Well, we could just go on and on and on about how horses learn to get on and off trailers. It's probably one of the most commonly asked questions anywhere. But we've got a guest coming up here, Sarah Johnson. So why don't we get her on the line right after this from our title sponsor, Horseware.
They say a good rider can hear his horse speak to him. But a great rider can hear his horse whisper. The years he's given me. Nobility without conceit. Friendship without envy. Beauty without vanity. A loyalty without compromise. I borrowed freedom when we rode. The history of mankind and civilization rode with us. His body took the weight of mine and I was carried through. I can still hear that whisper.
For more information on the complete line of Horseware turnouts, including Rambo, Rhino, and Amigo, visit horseware.com or ask your local retailer or online supplier for more information on horseware.com.
All right, so we've got with us today Sarah Johnson with the Horse Education Company, and that is a company that partners with the leading industry horse trainers and clinicians to bring innovative products to the market. How are you today, Sarah?
I'm awesome, Mary. How are you?
Good, good. So this is a really cool website. This is something, it's something I'm really getting addicted to the more I visit, and I'll actually have some stuff on there as well. So tell us a little bit about what it is and, how you had the idea to start this.
Sure enough. Well, basically I have had a background working with a lot of the top clinicians and educators, in the horse industry over my career. And I saw an opportunity where people were getting, a little bit stuck in their horsemanship. Maybe 15 years ago, we were all talking about trailer loading and how to get horses on trailers, and that was our major issue. But our horsemanship has come along and progressed so much, sort of as a horsemanship community in that intervening time, that we still talk about that, but we're also having much higher level conversations about the horse and how he learns and all of those kinds of things. And it's not, we're finding that horse owners, at least like myself, I was having the experience of not necessarily wanting to follow just one trainer, but wanting to take a lot of arrows and put them in my quiver from a lot of different trainers and a lot of different disciplines. So the concept behind the horse education program, so to speak, is the anti-program, how to make it easy for the at-home trainer to keep a happy athlete at home with educational tools and professional grade innovative tools that make it easier by those tools being lighter or for the horse, making it easier for the horse to understand pressure or any number of things, even to sports recovery for the horse or the human. So that's kind of us in a nutshell.
And I love the idea, you know, you kind of touched on it. I think the industry is really changing. You know, I worked for some of the kind of the same types in the industry, which had really cool programs. But I got the feel when I first started, you know, about a decade or so ago, that if you wanted to, you know, learn about a specific program, you sort of had to buy into it. And okay, you're going to have to get the starter kit and you're not going to learn how to do lead changes until you're at a certain spot in the program. And you've got to, you know, so you've got to get into it and you've got to stay in it. And you can only do this one because if you do anything else, it's going to mess up. And I'm really excited to see that it is changing to more of a, okay, I've got a good foundation. I know how to keep my horse safe and myself safe. And I just, you know, I really like the way so-and-so trainer teaches their lead changes. I want to find a little bit of that program. Or I really like the way so-and-so starts their colts. And so I think everything's starting to change in that aspect. And we're getting to, I think people are sort of being trusted more to find out what they like in their horsemanship and pick for themselves. And it's nice to have kind of a one-stop shop where you can do that. And then I agree with you in the fact that when I was doing clinics a decade ago, a lot and you know, longer than that, you know, really the first clinicians were sort of trying to keep people from dying, you know,
right?
Exactly. So someone would come to a clinic and they're saying, you know, they might tell you, well, I really want to work on lead changes. And I would tell them, you need to go back to the round pen and restart your horse because you're going to die. So there was a lot of getting people to understand what a foundation is and, okay, you have to start with this and learn how to yield your horse's hindquarters and get them on a trailer safely and teach him to tie and teach him not to run over you. But what I noticed is people started getting better. Now, when I go to a clinic, I would say a strong percentage of them already got all that great stuff. Their horse, they got a good emergency stop on their horse. Their horse has been desensitized and it's quiet to a lot of different stimuli and they're ready to show. They want to learn how to collect their horse. They want to learn how to start teaching the spins and all of that kind of thing. So I think as a whole, the general public is getting a lot more educated and a lot more savvy. And so with that said, do you have any kind of specific disciplines you're catering to, or is this something anyone can learn?
Well, we kind of cater across the board, or at least that's our aspiration. We have an approach basically to build a better mousetrap and take elements that have not previously been put together before. So if the natural horsemanship community hasn't really played well in the past with maybe the classical horsemanship area, we're trying to break down those barriers. If there's basically any two juxtaposed thought processes out there, we enjoy kind of the pursuit of trying to take the best of both worlds. And one of the ways that we've done that is with a product that we have. It's called the Hybrid Halter. And it actually combines a leather or flat webbing halter. We have it in both versions with a natural horsemanship rope halter. But what we've done then is add a sliding ring that makes it have a built-in lunging canvas on. And because of the stability of it, it makes it so that you don't have to take the halter off to trailer in it. It's trailer safe. You can cross tie in it. You can do all the things that you can't do in a rope halter. You never have to worry about the horse having to get cut out of it because the halter cinches down. And you can still personalize it the way you could a leather halter, and you can have all the control that you would have in a stud chain, but with this very polite and kind to the horse solution. So that's that's a kind of a quintessential example of what we like to remix both educationally and in our tool offering, so that we have something to offer basically all sides of the aisle, because everybody agrees, I think, now today that a happy horse is a happy athlete, and whatever we need to add to their program and whatever we need to do to make that more feasible for the horse to do for us, they will reward us. Horses are wonderful. They wear their hearts on their sleeves. We just a lot of times have to get out of their way to allow that to happen. So that's what we're trying to help make a lot easier.
Well, and on that halter, I think that's something where I've seen a little bit of maybe not contention, but debate across disciplines. Is I will see on Facebook, you know, someone will have their horse tied in a rope halter, and I'll see a lot of predominantly English folks or folks from overseas say, oh, no, that's bad. You can't tie in a rope halter. We don't like rope halters. And then the Western folks are saying, yes, but it's a wonderful training tool. And it's very, you know, I can't constantly switch back and forth. So I really like that that's kind of filled in that little gap there to where, you know, I feel safer about tying my horse up, but then I can just, you know, untie him and go right to training, and I still have something that's also good to train with. And so you have a number of clinicians featured. How do you go about picking who gets on the website, who you work with? Do you have any kind of sort of core horsemanship principles that you follow when it comes to that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the largest things that we look at in picking who to work with is the thought process that they approach the horse with. So are they philosophically thinking about how a horse learns? And are they breaking it down into micro steps so that that's easier for the horse? Because for our customer base, they are at-home trainers. And they can proudly say that they're at-home trainers. They have, whether knowingly or not, consciously or not, they've developed their own program over a lifetime of experience with their own horses, whether that's been they've only been in horses 6 months or they've been in it for 40 years. They've put together some, you know, tips and techniques of their own. So they may be looking for just one technique, or they may be looking for a whole program. But first and foremost, we're looking for trainers who are kind of thinking like a horse, who are trying to understand what motivates a horse, what makes them a happy partner, a happy employee, a happy companion, so to speak, and also keeping in mind the health of the horse's body. So how can we cross train? How can, like, you were a great example of somebody that we wanted to work with because of some of what you're doing in positive reinforcement. So if that horse is on layup from an injury, what you do with positive reinforcement can be a great way to keep their mind active and engaged. We have another trainer, Callie Krickerberg, who does a lot of young horse development. So she does a lot of things with pressure. We have a gold medalist reining horse trainer, Sean Florida, that we work with, who addresses some of the more competitive things of how can you get the competitive heart out of a horse and keep them going on a trajectory to perform. And that's kind of what we look for, is how somebody who has that balance between results and also wanting to earn the respect of the horse and earn their heart. And we can all go do better in that every day. But I think that's what we pick in our trainers, is people that are striving towards that goal in themselves, you know, whether they get that right every single time or they go, gosh, I'm going to try again tomorrow, which makes them just like us at home, yeah, following the good advice that you guys have to put forth.
And that's something that I've noticed across the board with the featured clinicians. And like you mentioned, there's Sean Flaherty, there's Callie Krickenberg, and Warwick Schiller, who's also a really good performance horse trainer, is with every one of those, I see change in their program. So it's good to have some core values. It's good to have some rules that you sort of like to stick to. But I think the clinicians that I really like to follow are the kind where if you go see them at a demo 1 year, they're doing one thing. And then if you go next year, you'll see they've evolved. Not changed it completely, not thrown everything out, but where you see they've sort of added to it, taken away. I like a clinician that will say something along the lines of, you know, I did it this way for years. You know, I used to teach a horse to back this way. And then, you know, as I was going, I discovered it's actually more helpful and clear to the horse if you teach it this way. So I really like that. I like where modern horsemanship is going in that aspect, in that people are getting more open-minded and not so rigid in what they're doing. And I think by having offerings from the clinicians who are not afraid to change and learn something and admit, okay, this wasn't as good when I did this 5 years ago and I've added to it, I think that's really valuable in horsemanship.
I would agree. Tom Dorrance had a phrase, something to the effect of, if somebody says that an animal is dumb, it's a sure sign that they've outfoxed them. And I think that modern horsemanship is evolving to that point where if you say your program works 100% of the time, there's going to be that horse that comes along who challenges you to think differently. And I think it's such an exciting time to be involved in the horse industry right now, because everybody's looking for solutions and everybody's much more collaborative than they've ever been in the, I think, history of horsemanship. It's now more like an art or science where everybody's findings and development is adding on to everybody else's. And that's just a really exciting phenomenon to be seeing right now.
Yeah, I really like, there's something similar that was written about Bill Dorrance. I think it was his obituary in the New York Times. And to paraphrase, it said something along the lines of, it's really hard to put a price on, you know, knowing that everything you know about horses may change with the very next horse, which that still gives me goosebumps, because that's exactly what horse training is. And so I think I'm really glad to see more people recognizing it. And, you know, on the collaboration thing, my very favorite clinics that I've ever done have been where I reached out and, you know, or a trainer reached out to me and we decided to teach a clinic together, you know, where one person covered one subject and I covered the other. And, you know, that's where I myself have learned the most as far as that goes. I also wanted to ask you, so you've got the hybrid halter and you've got a couple of other products with a different spin on it. So are those something that you come up with yourself? Do you have professional develop those? What kind of other products do you have featured and how do those come about?
Sure. So we also have an entire line of groundwork tools that we've made lighter, more durable, easier to use. Ropes that won't pick up water weight, tools basically that your horse can be lighter, more precise, because you don't have the fatigue in applying your cue. Say if you have typical natural horsemanship stick, one of the drawbacks we saw with that was your arm just gets fatigued, and a lot of people have arthritis or rotator cuff issues or any number of things over the years. And so what we've been able to do there with a little bit of engineering is shave 40% of the weight off of it and put a string on it that won't absorb water weight if it's raining outside. And we've done other things we've got a stick that collapses, so you can put it in your pocket and it's a flag, and it weighs only 8 ounces, but it'll collapse down to 9 inches, so that if you're working with a horse and all of a sudden, I need a flag now, well, it's in your back pocket. So we've put this thought in our mind of, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we had a fill in the blank? And then we tried to make that. So we have partnered with different trainers. Trainers are always coming up with cool ideas. So we've partnered with different trainers. Some of them have been from our own experience here. At different times, the Horse Education Company has had actually a learning lab set up at our headquarters here in Ocala, where we've had 15 horses in training, where if we've had a lot of products at a time, we are doing day-to-day, very intensive testing on those products. So everything that's in the catalog or on the website has been vetted through professional hands that we know it's the kind of thing that could stand up to, you know, 8 horses a day for, you know, months or years on end, not just the recreational use. So everything we sell is professional grade with then just that innovative little twist. To add it, we're adding saddles. We're getting into a lot of different areas. So long as we can keep the integrity of it and continue to add innovation and it be the highest possible quality. We have a lot of our products, most all of our products are either made in the United States or the United Kingdom. Construction is very important to us. We don't believe in a cheap product. We believe that as a horseman, we like to invest in good tech, good equipment that we're going to have for years to come. So that's kind of our approach for innovating and also, you know, selecting those products that we're going to say, yeah, that's cool. That's something different. So.
Awesome. I am such a product junkie. And of course, if something comes across that's just a little bit different, that catches my eye. And I need to look into the ropes that don't hold water because I've got a bunch of very heavy sandy lead ropes right now that's driving me crazy.
I think everybody has some of those in their barn.
Yes, especially right now. So we're going to have to wrap. But so if people are interested in discovering more about the site, where can we find you?
Yes, they can find us online at horseeducation.com. We're also very active on Facebook. If you want to look us up there, we've got about 190,000 fans, and that's under Horse Education Company on Facebook.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds awesome. I probably will go check it out right now. So thank you very much for your time, Sarah.
Thanks, Mary. Have a great day.
And let us not forget that Mary Kitzmiller has a DVD on that site. Which one?
I've got two that are featured.
Oh, two?
I've got, yes. I thought I just had one, but it turns out I have two. And that is my intro to positive reinforcement training as well as my lay down DVD.
I love the title of your lay down DVD. Lay down, no strings attached.
Exactly. Literally.
I love that. Well, let's take a break for a song and then we will get back with our listener submitted questions. Woohoo!
So far from winter, the grass is green. Hard to imagine that we will need to feed the horses so slick and round. But they're gonna need it when snow's on the ground. Hay in time, hay in time, making hay while the sun shines. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favorites, cause it's haying time. So call up your family, call all your friends, and we'll drink a cold one when the day ends. And when we stack that final bale, we'll celebrate and know we earned that ale. Hay in time, hay in time, making hay while the sun shines. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favors, cause it's hay in time. If you are a farmer, you know it won't make you rich. It's hard work, that's no lie. But the satisfaction at the end of days like this, no amount of money can buy. I swear it's 99. Call up all the neighbors, the givers and the takers. Call in all your favors, cause it's haying time.
And that was Haying Time by Mary Ann Kennedy. You can find her music at MaryAnnKennedy.com, and you can also find it on iTunes, CD Baby, and other places. And now, time for our listener-submitted questions. What do you want to start with, Mary?
Ooh, we got some really, really good ones this week. Let's start with the one, Kimberly Smiley, one of our auditors. And her question is, I came down in the saddle too hard one day, a couple of months ago, and my horse bolted and I came off. Now he's just an explosion waiting to happen every time I try to mount. How can I reroute his mind to be more calm when I try to mount? I have been laying across the saddle several times each day, but when I try to put my leg over, his head goes up and he is so wound up.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So that's a very tough situation. Of course, very, very scary. And this is a horse that I do run across from time to time. And to be bluntly honest, to me, this is a colt that needs to be restarted. I don't care if he's 20 and he's been ridden for 10 years. There's horses that I will encounter in clinics or lessons or get in for training that people have taken in parades and to play days and on trail rides and to shows. And I will evaluate that horse from the ground just because it's a safety thing I do. And that horse a lot of times will not meet the checklist that I have for colts that I start.
What's the checklist?
Oh, man. Well, it's in my head.
The breed version.
Yeah. So I have this kind of pre-flight checklist that tells me horses pretty safe to get on or, you know, do not get on, work more on groundwork until horse is ready. For one thing, so one of the big clues, the red flags I'm looking at in her question is she came down hard in the saddle, too hard in the saddle, and the horse bolted and she came off. So that's a big one. I understand that horses get surprised and things happen. You're never going to fully train the spook or bolt or anything out of them. You know, it can happen with the most well-trained broke horse. They're a living, breathing, thinking thing. They're reactive. They're prey animals. So things happen. But if a horse gets so, so reactive that you come off because you landed too hard in the saddle, that's a big red flag for me. And I myself have come off of a horse because of that. I was riding a horse with about 10 rides in the round pen. He was doing everything really good. And I rolled him back into the round pen to go the other direction. And he kind of lurched forward a little suddenly. And I just kind of, you know, slapped the saddle with my pockets and my jeans. And then he bucked me off. So one of the things I like to do to prevent that situation from happening is, first of all, I do a lot of flag work. I've got a stick with a nylon flag at the end of it. It's a little bit less loud and scary than a plastic bag, but it's got a little bit more commotion to it than, say, your lead rope or a string at the end of a stick. And I teach my horse to not only be quiet to the flag at the standstill, but I do it a lot while the horse is already in motion, because most of the things that make us fall off are things that happen to the horse while they're already moving. So that's very important. A lot of people desensitize great when their horse is standing still, and they never ever ask their horse to move while desensitizing. Well, it doesn't make any sense, because a lot of things happen while your horse is already walking or trotting and cantering.
The stealthy barking dog or the flapping laundry is not going to wait for you to be standing still.
Exactly. So I do a lot of flag work. I teach my horse to move around me. And if I flap that flag, they should just, their job is to keep going, whatever gate they were in, and, you know, just keep going. Or if they do get scared, that's okay, but they need to yield. They need to yield and stay in control. So I'll move that flag all over the place while that horse is moving around me in a circle. I'll flap it in the air. I'll touch body parts with it. And one of the things I do is, and it does not hurt the horse, I will build to the point, it takes time to build on this, but I will build to the point where I can whack them pretty hard on top of their saddle with that flag. Like I said, there's a lot of saddle and padding between the horse and their back, so it won't hurt them. I cannot
physically.
It just
makes that nasty, scary sound.
Yes.
You know,
it goes
sound.
Whap. Yes. And I don't just do that right off the bat and surprise them. I tell them it's coming, you know, over several lessons. But if that horse can handle me going whap, 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 whap on top of that saddle as they're walking around, then me accidentally sitting too hard down in the saddle is nothing. You know, they can handle it because they've had something that makes a lot of crazy noises already doing it. So I do a lot of work with that flag, kind of where I'm going to be in the saddle. And that flag's pretty loud and makes a lot of flapping and noisiness. And if they can handle that, then me being up there is nothing. So that's one thing I do, that I make sure the horse can handle. It does not have to be perfect. The horse doesn't have to be this stoic, complete picture of just ultimate quietness. That would be nice. But I at least gauge how the horse does react if he does. And I look at it and I think, can I sit that? Yeah, I probably can. And that's when I move on. So I'll do that. I'll do a lot of exercises that involve the horse seeing me from very high up. So I'll teach the horse to come get me on a mounting block or a fence. And as we work on that, I not only teach him to come get me, but I'll do things from the fence, like I'll slap that saddle with my hands or I'll reach over. This is a really good one for you, Kimberly, because you said the horse will let you lay across, but when you swing a leg over, he's not so great. So I'll hold onto the fence, make sure I'm steady on that fence, and I'll reach with my arm down the saddle and I'll take that stirrup and I'll just start lightly flapping it. Now, if he moves, I make sure I'm sturdy on that fence. If he moves, I'm on the fence. And all I do is ask him to come back over and we do it again. So that's just one extra step you can squeeze in there before you make the commitment of swinging your leg over him. So I do a lot of kind of moving those stirrups around. I'll really jostle that saddle around. I'll pull on that horn, you know, like just, or if it's an English saddle, I'll just kind of grab it and move it across
rock
their back.
Back and forth, yeah.
Yes. I also like to make sure that the horse is comfortable before I take one step from that horse's back. I make sure that I can touch them on the butt with something. So I'll practice getting halfway on and kind of just lightly rubbing my leg on their butt, because as much as I try to be a perfect rider with these colts and not disrupt them too much, not scare them too much, sometimes I lose my balance and I accidentally knee them in the butt when I get on. You know, it just happens.
Well, and you got to look at it this way too. It's just like what we talked about at the beginning of the show with the trailer loading. You can't just go full tilt, 1 foot on, 1 foot off, 1 foot on, mm-hmm. 1 foot off. It's partly desensitization, but another ingredient is learning to be familiar with the horse's body language and signals and what his likely reactions are going to be. The first time I bumped him on the bum, he took off like a bat out of you know where. But as mm-hmm. I desensitized him, he became more familiar. Now all he does is puts his ears back. But I have learned now that at his levels of anxiousness, what his reactions are, so I can take appropriate action. I can be ready for it. I can just not go there at all. It's a two-sided learning curve here. You learn what the horse is likely to do and his desensitization habit, where he goes from highly reactive to less, where those steps down, and he learns how to step it down as well. It's both sides. So you really learn a lot about the horse. And one of the things that take a step completely back is the horse having a back issue. Make sure there's nothing wrong medically. Is the saddle fitting him properly? Is the girth fitting him properly? Is the girth put on properly? Because all of those things, it might be that problem's just sitting there waiting to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and if this horse has been really good up to this point and this is completely uncharacteristic of him, that is a big red flag for health issues. So I totally agree on that. You know, whether maybe he's grown a little bit and the saddle doesn't fit as well as he used to, or he's out somewhere or something's not adjusted quite right. So you've got to take that into perspective. And when you're doing this desensitizing him, you're prepping for the first ride, you do try to prepare for every contingency. Obviously, it's physically impossible. I can't get him to be prepared in case we're riding in a field and we kick up some turkeys. Unless I hire some turkeys to come over and scare my horse every day, it's just not going to happen. You know?
How do you practice a flock of turkeys? You don't.
Yeah. So, you know, so I not only prepare for every experience that might happen, I might accidentally knee you in the ribs when I get on, I might accidentally lose my balance and sit too hard in the saddle, I might accidentally kick you in the butt, I might accidentally pull too hard on your reins. I prepare them for that. You know, I prepare them for noises and sights and sounds and everything. But I also am prepared that my horse will just react to something that I didn't, you know, plan on or I didn't know he was going to do. So in that case, I also do a lot of groundwork where I teach my horse to yield to pressure. I don't punish my horse for being scared. I don't punish him for spooking. All I do is teach him, okay, I understand you need to move your feet. I know that you feel you need to do this to survive. That's okay. But if you're going to move your feet, can you do it in a way that's going to keep both of us alive? So yay. I teach him to, yes, I teach him to yield their hindquarters, soften to that bridle. I teach him to respond very well to the word whoa. So that's yet another thing that I'm prepared for, is that moment where even in the midst of all our preparation, stuff is still going to happen. So if it does and you got to move because you're scared, that's okay. I'm going to teach you how to move in a way that you can still move your feet and do that until you feel safe and I can stay on you. If my horse is yielding its hindquarters around, even if they're going as fast as they can, but they're yielding their hindquarters, my grandma can ride that. So, you know, I'm probably going to be okay. I can shut them down and get to a safe spot with my horse.
Let him get that initial reaction out of his system. He's learned now that he can think it through. Everybody can take a deep breath and regroup.
Exactly.
Yay! Good job. Okay, Kimberly, go to town. We want to hear how it works out.
Yes, and be safe. Oh, one last thing I want to put on that. This is kind of a lengthy answer, I know. But, and this happens with even me. Sometimes I will prepare, and my horse is just very troubled in one area, and I look at its reaction, and there'll be a time where even after all the work I've done, I look at it, and I think, you know what? I probably can't ride that. So in that case, I will find a good friend or a professional who I know can help the horse through it from their back. There's no shame in it whatsoever. And they, you know, I'll find someone who's a little bit handier with that than me and get their help. They can put some rides on the horse, help them from their back, and then I can get on and continue on.
There you go. Don't be afraid to ask for more help. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's never worth, oh, I can do this and I'm going to get chucked. No, don't want to do that. Nope.
Exactly.
Alrighty. Who's up next? These are good questions.
Yes. Okay. So we have one from Anne Marie Bruins. And these are all HRN auditors, by the way.
Yay.
You guys are awesome. What do you recommend for a bit for a horse that tends to grab it and run and have a very hard mouth? How do you get them sensitive again?
We've opened Pandora's box here.
Yes. Loaded question. So I hear the word hard mouth a lot, or my horse is dull, or they're heavy or whatever. I bet if you went into the pasture and observed this very same horse and you saw a fly land on him, he would, you know, his skin would move and he'd reach around and get that fly off immediately. Or, you know, something was bothering him in his mouth, or he got a piece of grass stuck between his, you know, lips and his gums. He would do everything he can to get that grass out of there because he's uncomfortable. So these horses are incredibly sensitive. And in my experience, in my opinion, they stay sensitive. But they learn to block out a lot of things because it's almost the more sensitive horses I've found that get heavy, because they just, their defense mechanism is just to shut down and ignore it. It's almost kind of like someone who has autism when their environment gets too much and just too many things coming at them at once. They just shut down and go inside themselves, and that's their defense, to just block everything out. And I see this with horses quite a bit. I would almost argue that the term hard mouth is incorrect. I think he's probably just as sensitive as he ever was. He's just learned to block certain things out as a defense mechanism.
Now, question here.
Yes.
Could you, a horse that has this habit, and you see it a lot, could you quantify or categorize this as almost, because we've talked about this in previous episodes, a poisoned cue?
Yes, where now they've just associated the bit or the maneuver with discomfort, that's just the behavior they go to every time. What tends to happen, because I've experienced this a lot, so I'm not trying to dump on you, Anne-Marie, and say, oh my gosh, what have you done to this horse? This just happens in training. I went through this with Guthrie, actually, where he got very quote-unquote hard-mouthed and wanted to grab the bit and kind of evade. And it just happens. I'm willing to admit, okay, I see where I did this and this and this, which led to this habit. Once the habit is formed and it's repeated, then it's very easy for them just to jump right to doing that evasive maneuver. Even if you're not using a lot of pressure, they've just learned to do it and they just keep going right back to that. So here's the tricky part. I know a lot of trainers who would say, oh, you can train anything in a smooth mouth snaffle, or you need to take the bit out of that horse's mouth because bits are evil and you need to just ride with a neck rope as you lope, you know, through the magical meadow and have, you know, a bond.
like yes, I said, that Pandora's box.
Exactly. Yes, that would be wonderful. And I do believe that it's possible to train any horse without a bit, or with a smooth mouth snaffle or what have you. But you have to also gauge the horse in the situation. So oftentimes, yes, changing your equipment to, instead of going harsher, to go to a hackamore, because a hackamore works on them a little bit differently. I don't mean mechanical hackamore. I mean like a traditional Western hackamore, or a bitless bridle. A lot of the time that can really help a horse because it works on them differently. It takes a great deal of the pressure off. It changes their thinking. But in some cases, I need to use something that will make a direct line of communication to my horse that will help stop any dangerous behavior. So I'm not going to tell you that, oh, you need to take all the bits out of their mouth. And I'm also not going to tell you, oh, you need to get a harsher bit on that horse. Because in that case, using a harsher bit becomes a bit of an arms race. Once this horse has developed this habit, and if you haven't successfully figured out why. What are you doing? What's going on in your horse's environment? What's going on in his body that is making him grab this bit and go and beginning this potentially very dangerous habit? If you haven't addressed that, then going to a harsher bit will only put a band-aid on it. So you'll go from a smooth mouth to a twisted wire, works beautifully for a few weeks. Then he learns to evade that. Okay, so, you know, maybe we need something with a bit of a curb and a chain on it. Okay, so that works for a few weeks or a few months. And then pretty soon they learn how to get out of that. Okay, so why don't we put something with some draw reins and martingale, or, you know, German martingale or whatever, tie down, or you know, okay, that works for a little while. And then they'd evade that. And you see what I'm getting at here. And it just becomes an arms race. They get more powerful, you get more powerful. They get more powerful, you get more powerful. So pretty soon you get this crazy concoction of equipment in your horse's mouth that is just ridiculous. So it just doesn't work because you're only fixing the symptom, which is your horse. The symptom is your horse is bolting. He's grabbing the bit. He's heavy. But what's the cause? Does he need his teeth looked at again? I've had horses that I had the dentist check up on them. Here's what I've had happen. I had the vet float their teeth. So I thought, it's not their teeth. Just had their teeth done. And then I had someone who was a little bit more experienced with dental work look and say, okay, he still has some points here. And look, his mouth is all ulcerated up and down his cheeks from how sharp his teeth were. So he's still experiencing pain. So sometimes it mm-hmm. takes a little bit. You can't just check off, say, well, I had his teeth done. Can't be that. Sometimes it still is. And it's tricky. So you have to figure out what's causing it. Let's say you realize, okay, it might be a training issue or something to do with pressure. I try to find a piece of equipment my horse likes. Sometimes it might be something like a junior cow horse bit, or it might be a different type of snaffle, or it might be bitless. This is something that's going to be a little tricky. You'll find out something that can, okay, I can get my horse stopped in this bit if I need to, if things go wrong. But then you also have to change your training. I really work on, again, teaching them how to yield those hindquarters, teaching them how to give their nose. If, say, this was happening and this has happened to me, I had a horse that did this when I was working on spins to the right. And for some reason, during spins to the right, he just grabbed the bit and go. Wouldn't do it to the left, only did it to the right. So when I figured out it, and in this horse's case, it was his teeth. So I figured that out, but the habit was still there. So I had to backtrack on this horse. I had it in my head. We're ready to work on these spins with some speed. I had to go all the way back. Okay, let's just turn right. Okay, great. I had to go back several months in training, and I felt a little hopeless at first because I thought we were so advanced. But when I took a few weeks just to let off of that horse and just let's work on loping around on a loose rein and just go on some trail rides and let's work on stuff that's not so much pressure and just have fun together. Then I was actually able to go back to my spins, and we didn't have that source of tension and I have to run away from you because it's too much pressure.
Back and filled in those holes, just like you're doing with that mare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a hole somewhere.
So that's really what we need to look for. What you boil it down to is make sure the horse doesn't have a physical problem. And then you need to backtrack one step at a time. Keep going back, back, back until you find the hole.
Exactly. And sometimes it's very easy to spot, and sometimes it's the most unexpected thing ever. So, you know, as far as what kind of bit, I will use a piece of equipment that I know, okay, I can talk to this horse if I need to. You know, I'll use something that the horse likes that I know, okay, if I have to shut this horse down because things get too real, I can do it. And then from there, I attack it with training, making sure I'm not using too much pressure, making sure there's no holes, making sure I didn't jump too far forward too quickly. So pretty much that in a nutshell.
This is a problem. The horse gets the bit and leaves, whether it's literally bolting or just leans into you and you can, you know, you no longer have decent steering, or you can no longer get the horse to go from a extended trot back to a working trot because he just trots down the long side without you.
Yes.
This happens in every single discipline. It happens to trail horses. It happens to race horses. It happens to dressage horses and reining horses. This is a problem that is completely universal. And that's one of the things that makes it so complex is it's a failure of the system. Somewhere previous, there's some kind of issue that came up and created this, and it's very difficult to find it. Frequently with a racehorse, it's just that something startled him and he took off like a bat out of you-know-where, and that scared him even more. And all of his friends ran with him, and he got it into his head that, oh my gosh, I need to leave town. And that stays with him throughout his career because, you know, when a horse racehorse runs off, it's not as big a deal as when a dressage horse runs off. But it's universal, and it is not easy to fix. And Anne-Marie, you got a lot of courage to ask that question, and I'm sorry we couldn't just give you the bit name and size.
Yes. It, you know, if I could, then I would have invented it and I'd be a bajillionaire.
You would be a millionaire right now. Absolutely.
I also want you to know that it's not just, oh, this is such an amateur problem. This is everybody. I know world champion, you know, million-dollar earning riders that have dealt with this in a horse. I won't say it's unavoidable, but I will say sometimes you kind of walk into this and then you realize, oh, you have a problem with grabbing the bit. And, you know, it doesn't mean that your skill level is not up to par. It doesn't mean that you were mean to your horse. It just sometimes with training, you know, training is peaks and valleys and it just happens. And so you need to just, okay, let's figure out why. You know, it's like looking under the hood of the car. What's going wrong to make the car's check engine light come on? And if you don't have a neat scanner, if it's an old car, you're going to have to actually look for it. So horses are very much the same.
Do not cover the check engine light with a post-it note.
Yes. Don't punch out your dashboard.
Don't punch
out. By getting a bigger bit.
Do a lot of investigating. And Anne-Marie, if you start to get it all figured out and you have some light bulbs, we'd love to hear about your light bulbs.
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. Who's next?
Okay. Oh, Casey Berger. How do you teach a horse to side pass?
Ooh, goody.
I get this one all the time. So a side pass to me is a combination of maneuvers. So when I think side pass, what has to be happening with my horse? It seems simple. Just horse go sideways, right? Well, it's not quite as easy, but when you break it down, it can be. So I need his shoulders to be able to move sideways, and I also need his hips to be able to move sideways because those go sideways at the same time. And then in between, I've got to be able to get his rib cage to go sideways. And then there's also an element of forward and back and softness. So let's say he goes sideways, but he's also kind of going forward. So he's two tracking or leg yielding more than actually side passing. So I need to be able to pick up on the reins and get him to back off a little bit so he goes more sideways. Or let's say he goes sort of sideways, but he's kind of backing at the same time. So I have to have good forward aids to get him to go forward. I've got to be able to not only balance him left and right, but forwards and backwards. And, you know, obviously he needs to be soft on the bit to do all these things. So with most quote-unquote advanced maneuvers, I would say this is a pretty advanced maneuver. It's usually a combination of several very simple maneuvers. So both on the ground and under saddle, I make sure, can I get just your hip to step over? Now, can I get you to put it back where you had it? Now, step over again. Now, put it back. Can I get you to move your hip all the way around your shoulders? And then the same with the shoulders. Step your shoulder over, put it back. Step your shoulder over, put it back. Can I get you to move your shoulders around your hips? As we're riding forward, can I get you to move your rib cage so you drift more toward the rail and then off the rail? How good is your backup? Can you give to the bit if I ask? Are you responsive? You know, if you're not moving forward enough, is it easy for me to get you to move forward with my legs? So I check all of those tiny, simple maneuvers out and get those working good. And then, and you can start this on the ground or under saddle, but I will use the fence to help me out so I don't have to control so many of those things at once. So I usually start it out, and you can start it pretty early on. I'll just walk my horse down the fence, and then every so often I'll pick up on my outside rein, lightly lift it up. And if I have worked on moving his hips, I will bring my leg back and ask him to move his hips away from the fence. And once he does it a couple steps, I just let him stop, rest for a few seconds, and then go back on my way, same direction down the fence. And I'll do that. I like to cool my horse off by doing this. So let's say I've loped around and I've got him to turn left and right, and we're working on going over obstacles or whatever, and we're ready to cool down. I'll walk him down the rail at a loose rein, and just every so often ask him to kick his hip over. I do it around the ring once each way, so he'll move his hip both ways, and then I get off. So I'll do that for a few days. And then what I'll do is the next day, next session or whatever, I'll walk him down the fence, kick his hip over. But this time, instead of letting him stop once he moves his hip, I'll bring my leg back to their rib cage and see if he'll just go sideways even for a tiny half of a step. And I just build on that, so on and so forth. It's easier to get your horse to do a side pass if he's already moving. So I usually like to walk him and then yield him into that side pass and just get a step or two and reward him big time for trying. So I'll do that on the fence quite a bit from a walk, and then I'll start doing it from a standstill. I don't really care if his head is counterflexed or whatever. I just kind of try to keep his nose on the fence. If he's uncomfortable doing that on the fence, he needs to work a lot resting on the fence so he feels very comfortable standing up right next to it. And then once I've practiced doing it on the fence for a while, then I'll start asking for him off the fence. And then from there, I'll add, you know, little tweaks here and there, like, okay, make sure your head's nice and straight, or you've got this certain frame on the bit, or whatever. And another thing that'll help me get it out in the open is I'll start teaching him to side pass over a pole. So it just gives him a physical and a visual cue, to know exactly where he's got to put his body.
There we go. I'm going to go out and try it.
Yes, it's lots of fun.
I like that cooling out exercise. I'm going to make use of that.
I really like to introduce maneuvers like a reining spin, backing up, and side passing as a cool down, because mentally for me, I know we're almost done, so don't get my horse riled up. And it kind of does the same thing for the horse. So they know, okay, this is pretty fun. Yeah, every time we work on this side passing thing, we're done, we're relaxing, she gets off, I get to go back with my buddies. So he'll start looking forward to it. And then after I get it pretty good, then I can put it wherever I want in the ride. But I like, instead of saying, today we are side passing and I'm not getting off of you until you do a perfect side pass, 10 steps perfectly collected. That's where you get your horse rearing up and running off. I just sneak it on. I'm like, hey, can you move a step sideways? Okay, that's great. I'm done today. Same thing with turnarounds. Same thing with moving the hips. Same thing with softening to the bridle or backing up. I love to just sort of sneak them in at the tail end of my lesson.
There we go. Well, thank you very much, Casey. And we had a great group of questions submitted by our auditors this month. And we love it when you guys do that. And again, we love to hear about the successes too. So hop on the HRN Auditors Facebook page and tell us about your successes, or you can drop an email to Mary so she can hear about them personally, if you don't want to put it out there in the internet. Where can folks find you on the interweb, Mary?
I am at marykitzmiller.com, and then you can also find me on Facebook at Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. And we got a lot of cool things going on there. You know, I do some Q&As on there. We do some sales of some cool products we made. So got a lot of activity on the Facebook page.
Cool. And again, Mary is here the second Thursday of every month. And this show was pre-recorded and put up because the Hit'em crew is out in Colorado taking vacation, as it will be for the next 2 weeks or so. We're going to have lots and lots of new content every day. It's not just reruns. So tune in, but you're not going to see it on the live feed. You're just going to see it recorded. And tune in again tomorrow. We're going to have more good stuff for you. And you can find links to today's guests at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And you can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And you can download the free iPhone or Android app for your cell phone and have every episode with you wherever you go. Just go to your app store and search for Horse Radio Network. Or you can subscribe via iTunes. And thank you again to Horseware for sponsoring today's show. And we'll see you again next month, Mary.